And hi. And I'm a grateful member of the Mercer Allentown Group in Mercer, Pennsylvania, and I'm a chairperson for this meeting today. Could we open this meeting with serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The principle of personal anonymity at the public level is just as important for the relatives and friends of an alcoholic as it is for the AA member. At the level of press, radio, and TV, all Al-Anons are anonymous. It is the member's choice how anonymous he or she wishes to be with friends, associates, and others. However, there is a much broader meaning in the traditions. They stretch principles of personalities to assure us that no one uses Al-Anon for profit, prestige, or power. I'd like to have Eric read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Eric. I'm from Alateen from Lawrenceville, Georgia. Okay, I'm supposed to read the preamble. I just found out about this a couple days ago. I mean, yesterday, so I'm nervous. All right. Alateen, a part of Al-Anon Family Groups, is a fellowship of young people whose lives have been affected by alcoholism in a family member or close friend. We help each other by sharing our experience, strength, and hope. We believe alcoholism is a family disease because it affects all the members emotionally and sometimes physically. Although we can not change or control our parents, we detach from their problems while continuing to love them. We do not discuss religion or become involved with any outside organization. Our sole topic is the solution of our problems. We are always careful to protect each other's anonymity as well as of that AA or Al-Anon member. By applying the 12 steps of AA to ourselves, we begin to grow mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. We will always be grateful to Alateen for giving us the wonderful, healthy program to live by and enjoy. 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will, our lives, over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. 6, we're entirely ready to God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when wrong, properly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to others and practice these principles in all our affairs. That's it.
Well, I just found out I was going to do this yesterday. This is the first time I ever meet our speaker for today. And this is her first time at Jackson's Mill, so I've never met her here. And she's from South Carolina. And I got to know her a little bit better in one of the rap sessions last night, and I think we have a little bit in common, so I'm very, very interested in hearing what she has to say. So with that, I'll give you Vicki.
Hi, I'm Vicki Riddle, and I'm from Greenville, South Carolina. I'm a member of the Taylors Caring and Sharing Alateen Group in Taylors. Now, to give you the difference between Taylors, South Carolina, and Greenville, South Carolina, it's kind of like a suburb. And for all of those people I've seen out there with Marshall stickers on your cars, Greenville is home of Furman University. I think y'all have probably heard of them. I'd like to thank Jean, for inviting me. We've had a wonderful weekend. This place is beautiful. I'd like to thank Tina and John for coming over and picking us up at the airport and having just a really great conversation between Charleston and here. We've just really enjoyed it so far. And I'd like to thank all of y'all for the warmth and the love I feel. I'm still a little nervous right now, but it'll calm down in a few minutes and I'll feel a lot better. My mom gave me a few pieces of advice before I came up here. She told me to stand up straight, talk clearly, and whatever I do, I'd better tell the truth because she's taking tape back to my sponsor. I'm not sure what I'm going to say because I know that it's going to be God talking. And it's kind of hard still sometimes remembering back to the past because each time you speak, you relive a little bit of it. There's a poem that I've seen that reminds me of my life so much. It's called Broken Dreams. And it goes like this. As children bring their broken toys with tears to us to mend, I brought my broken dreams to God because he was my friend. But instead of leaving him in peace to work alone, I hung around and tried to help in ways that were my own. At last I snatched them back and cried, "How can you be so slow?" "My child," he said, "what could I do? You never did let go." From the very beginning of when I knew about the problems, I never let go of them. I felt a responsibility for them, and I felt like that a lot of it was my fault. I'm an only child, and my early years, things were pretty nice. My father traveled a lot, and it was just my mom and I at home. And when he came in, I always got toys or presents from wherever he had been. And it reminded me of the fairy tales my mom used to read me at bedtime, because everything was just perfect, or at least it seemed like it was that way. Occasionally, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and hear those arguments, but I thought I imagined them. I thought they were just bad dreams. I didn't know how bad the dreams were really going to get in the next few years. When I first had the shattering of that little glass house I lived in, of all my dreams and all my expectations of what my parents were supposed to be like, it wasn't really due to alcoholism, although alcoholism had caused it. My father had been running around some. My mom caught him. And he decided he was going to bring me in on this because he was going to deny it. And he was going to try to prove my mom insane. I didn't know the alcoholism was already working in our family. And I didn't know the problems that had been caused by it. And I didn't see my father's problem with the drinking. I saw my mother's craziness. I saw a woman who rushed out of the house one night with a gun swearing she was going to kill him. And I went to my room, and I crawled in my bed, and I cried. Because I didn't know what to do. Things evened out after that. You know, she didn't go to an insane asylum. Somehow everything managed to work out. But things were never quite the same in the house. There wasn't any trust. And there wasn't any trust for me either. Because I didn't trust her. I didn't trust him because they had completely and totally screwed up my life. They'd ruined all those dreams and expectations I thought I was supposed to have. They ruined that perfect home that I thought every one of y'all had. All the smiling faces I saw at school. I thought everyone's home was perfect except for mine. And I couldn't believe that they were going to screw up my life like that. It hurt me so much to the point I questioned whether they loved me. I didn't feel any love in the house. And it wasn't that it wasn't there. It was the fact that I didn't want to feel it because they had hurt me once and I didn't want to be hurt again. So I began a life of living inside me. I didn't want anyone, anything, to hurt me again. I didn't want to feel that same despair and churning of my stomach and pain that I'd felt. So I decided that I wasn't letting anything touch me, anything hurt me inside. And I found my escape in many different ways. At the time, I decided I wanted to swim competitively, and I did. And that swim team and those swim practices and those times out of the house were my escape. I didn't have to worry about what was going on at home if I didn't have to be there. And I could pretend that everything was okay for the times that I was there. I just tried to ignore them. And I'm not saying that all the times then were bad, because I can remember good times. Sometimes it's hard for me to remember the good, because I can dwell on the bads too many times. There was still some love in the house. It was just kind of hard to show it, because so much trust had been broken down between all three of us. And Dad's drinking was getting worse, and Mom's attitudes were getting worse. And my digging deeper inside myself and building my walls against everyone else was getting worse. Back in about 1980, my father was transferred down to Louisiana. It was supposed to be temporary. And for a while, he was supposed to be transferred back to Greenville. So Mom and I stayed in Greenville, and he went to Louisiana. I think there is where the disease that affected our family truly got very bad. The drinking was getting worse. Mama couldn't control it. I couldn't control it. And his drinking was getting worse and worse and worse. And he would call in the middle of the night. And a lot of the same things that you see, when they come in, asking where they've been, what they've been doing, would be done over the phone. AT&T made a lot of money off us that year. And when we went down to visit, it was no different than when it was at home. There were still the nights that he'd go out and stay out. He'd come in at 11, 12 o'clock, and totally have ruined dinner, because dinner would have been cold for hours by then. Mom would still insist that he have dinner. Come sit down, eat right now. I didn't want dinner at that time. My appetite had been ruined. He didn't want dinner at that time. He was drunk. She was determined she was going to control the situation. And I was determined I was going to buck her. I wasn't going to do things her way. We had a lot of arguments. We didn't talk a whole lot. I don't think we liked each other a whole lot either. We came back from Louisiana, from our visit, from our summer down there. And I got back involved in swimming, and there were two new kids on the team. Mom started getting to be good friends with their mother. And they had just been divorced and had moved down to South Carolina. And I don't know, somehow Mom actually admitted to Jerry that there was a problem in the house. That there was, the alcohol problem that was going on around us. And Jerry suggested Mama going to Al-Anon. Well, she found out, she went to Al-Anon one night. She came home and she was just bubbly. She's smiling, she remembers. She came in and she had figured out what was wrong with Dad. He was an alcoholic. And she called him on that phone and she let him know that he was an alcoholic. And she sat me down and told me that he was an alcoholic. And it didn't mean a thing to me. And it certainly didn't mean anything to him. And so she decided that she didn't like Al-Anon because it wasn't going to tell her how to make him stop drinking. So So I decided I wasn't going to like Al-Anon because it wasn't going to make him stop drinking. We actually agreed on something. During that time when he was in Louisiana, he went to some AA meetings. I don't know what happened. I know that he was drinking and going to AA, and drinking and going to AA. And that was to set off a pattern that was going to last about the next 4 years. And I certainly didn't get a good opinion of y'all, because he was supposed to be going to your meetings, and y'all were supposed to stop him from drinking, and y'all weren't. And he was still drinking. And my opinion of the program was not good. Dad came back from Louisiana. He lost his job, or he quit ahead of losing it, or one of those things. And he was back in the house with no job. Mama was working. I was coming home to my full-time babysitting job. I'd come home in the afternoon. It was my responsibility to keep him from drinking from the time of when I got home from school and when she got in to cook dinner. That wasn't an easy task. And I can remember the times that she'd come in and he would have gone because I couldn't keep him at home. I was only 12. And he would be gone and she would be angry for me for letting him go. And I can remember the times that I didn't want to be alive. I didn't want to have to deal with it. It wasn't my fault. I hadn't been asked to be there. What had I done that was so terrible that I had to live through this? And that was my attitude. I'd forgotten about the God that I'd grown up with, the one I'd been taught about when I'd gone to church, the one that you're supposed to be able to pray to and him answer your prayers. And he never answered my prayers to stop the drinking. He never answered my prayers to make her better. He never answered the prayers to make my life the way it was before all that started. So I didn't believe there was God. Because if he was there, why wasn't he helping me? Things were getting worse. I didn't know what to do. Mama didn't know what to do. And Dad, coming back home, had finally decided maybe he had a problem. So he started going to AA. And she started back to Al-Anon. And things were still a little rough. And he was still drinking some. And they got me to go to an AA meeting, to an open AA speakers meeting. I sat in the meeting at the treatment center, and I listened. And we hadn't been what that family had been through. We hadn't lost our house. We hadn't lost jobs after jobs. There wasn't any physical violence in our house. So I couldn't relate, and I said, I don't have a problem. I don't need this program. Why am I here? If y'all want to go, that's fine. But nothing's wrong with me. The next 3 or 4 months, I lived through hell. My own inside personal hell. Because they were doing okay. There were still the problems. But I didn't want to admit that I was sick. They got me to go to another AA speakers meeting. Food got me to go. They mentioned that there was going to be food afterwards, and I made the mistake of going, ah, food. And they're going, come on, put your clothes on. You know, get your shoes, let's go. We went into that meeting that night, and we were sitting there, and I was feeling uncomfortable as usual, and we're at the club. And this lady walks in the door, and Mama kind of nudges me with her elbow, and she goes, Vicky, she has the cutest son that goes to Alateen. And I turn bright red, and I'm going, oh, no, no. And here's Mom, come over here. And the lady comes over. She said, I want you to meet my daughter. And she introduces me and everything. And she said, oh, you have to tell her about Alateen and everything. And I'm just sitting there going, I'm going to kill her. And when she started talking to me about, you know, about her family and everything, she told me her son's name. I couldn't believe it. Because I'd gone to school with her son for 5 years.
And he wasn't someone that I expected to be an Alateen. I don't know what my picture of Alateen was, but you know, he was one of the good-looking guys at school. He was always happy. He wasn't someone that was going to have alcoholism in their home. He wasn't like me. He wasn't introverted and scared and insecure. He couldn't be. And so they kind of conned me into going to Alateen. And I kind of tried to get out of it. And that was on a Sunday night, and the Alateen meeting was on a Wednesday night. And there's a lot of hours between Sunday and Wednesday, especially with an Al-Anon nagging you that you need to go to a meeting. Wednesday night I went. And that night they had a combined Alateen-Al-Anon meeting. And I sat there with my head hung low for almost that entire hour, because I was ashamed to be there. I was ashamed that they couldn't control that disease, and I was ashamed that I had to come and put up with it. It never occurred to me until about time for the meeting to close that he was there for the same reason I was. There was no reason he couldn't look me in the eye. And we talked afterwards, and he got me to say that I would come back. For the next 6 months, he was the reason I came back. And about 6 months later, I went to a convention, my first convention. I met some other Alateens there, some Alateens from different parts of the state, some Alateens who really cared about me, who said they loved me, and who smiled at me. And it was neat. Now that 6 months from the time I first went to Alateen to that convention, my father was sober. And of course there were problems, the family living problems. But it was nice. But it didn't last. And I had to find out how to use Alateen programs inside me. Not just go there and sit for an hour. Because when he started back drinking, I started back to my old attitudes. I was lucky enough that summer to be able to go to Europe, and I left for a month. I came home, and there was an incredible difference in my mother. Before, she had tried to control the situations, tried to control the drinking, and it hadn't worked. And in that time that I was gone, she found herself an Al-Anon sponsor. And this woman and her husband became both my parents' sponsors. And they were beautiful. And I saw the way my mom was living. She was happy. It didn't matter that he was coming in at 2 a.m. drunk. She could go to bed at nights. She didn't have to wait dinner on him. She didn't have to yell at me because he wasn't there when she came home. And I couldn't understand the change. But I knew that I liked it. I knew that I wanted something like it. I wanted that same kind of peace with myself, that serenity. Only way I knew I was going to get it is to go to work on my Alateen program. And that's what I did. I asked someone to be my sponsor. I started looking at those steps for a change. I started realizing that I was powerless over the alcohol. For so many years, I felt like I was part of the problem because, you know, I saw that the economic problems, financial problems, where I was the only one that would answer the phone in the house because they wouldn't want to talk to any of the bill collectors. I knew there were times when there wasn't enough food in the house, but I always seemed to have enough. And those times when they couldn't afford to pay those bills, I always seemed to have clothes, and I felt guilty. And I couldn't understand some of those things. And I knew I wanted to grow. I knew I didn't want to be that hateful, scared, insecure person I was. I didn't want to hate my father, and I didn't want to hate my mother. And I looked at step one.
I admitted I was powerless over alcohol. And as hard as it was, I also admitted that my life was unmanageable. I didn't like to admit that there weren't things that I could do, because I always wanted to be the best. I always tried to strive to do the things that would make them proud. I didn't like admitting that I was powerless. About 3 months later, my father moved out. He decided that with his drinking, he couldn't live with mom working a program and myself working a program. And once my father was gone, he didn't come back. And that house changed. We didn't come home scared anymore, worried about what we were going to find, worried about where he's going to be passed out, worried about bringing people in. We were able to get back on our feet some with not having to worry about getting the bills paid or whether the lights were going to be turned out. And it was wonderful. But I wasn't working a complete program, because I still blame my father for those things, because he was gone and they changed. And I didn't want to have anything to do with my father at all. He had totally screwed up my life. I was trying to work an Alateen program, but it's awfully hard to work an Alateen program when you still have so much hate in your heart. So, the following June, or July, I don't remember which, my parents went in for their divorce. I was there too. I was never called into the court, and I'm glad of that, because I'd have a lot of amends more to make to both of them now than I do now if I'd had to been put in the middle of that divorce situation. Alateen stood by me through those hard times, through those times when my father was calling me drunk and begging me to see him, through those times when I had to go sit that divorce hearing and see both of my parents cry. And I ached inside because I didn't want to feel that way. But I could turn around and I could call anyone. And they were there for me. For a hug, to go out for ice cream, whatever I needed. That unconditional love that you can only find in a program like this. The Alateens were there. The Al-Anons were there. The AAs were there. And they became my mom and mine's family. They were the people who supported us through everything. They were the people who helped us deal with it. The man who had been one of my father's sponsors helped me through that a lot too. His wife was my mom's sponsor. They're a cute little couple, and you could see him. I enjoyed going to meetings just to see him talk to people. And he could be the most beautiful man when he was smiling. I certainly wouldn't have wanted that man for my sponsor, because he was tough. And he died a few years ago. And the night before he died, I was sitting at the hospital talking to him. And he had me read from his 24-hour day book to him. And the first sentence of that page still stands out in my mind. Who am I to judge? Who am I to judge? I can't judge what my father's done. I can't judge what my mother's done. I can't judge what y'all have done. My life hasn't been perfect, and I learned a lot from that. Man had 38 years of sobriety when he died. And he was very special to me, because he taught me to let go a little bit of that hate. I let go of a little bit of that hate that I felt. Over the next few years, I got involved pretty much in Alateen, doing service work, speaking, doing a lot of different things. I know now I wasn't being completely honest when I got up here and told you how wonderful my life was and how I was working my program. Because I can't work a perfect program every day, and I know that now. But I can get up each morning and pray to God to do my best and go to bed at night and thank Him for what I was able to do. And I felt so much love in these rooms that it's taught me so much. It's taught me to deal with people outside the program, that I can have friends that aren't in Alateen, and they're not necessarily going to hurt me. And I always had fear of being hurt. I never feared y'all hurting me because I felt that love, that understanding, the friendship. But I still feared it outside the program. And God brought me a friend that I had to learn to deal with that. And I thank the Lord for it because it's a very special friend now. And I can accept that there are people out on the outside who can love us just the way we are too. I didn't think anyone could love me the way I was. I mean, what was there to love about me? I couldn't love myself. Last fall, I started to college. It was a real scary time, especially since looking at schools, looking at colleges, had just become horrible with both my parents. Because there's two big schools in the state of South Carolina. Mama wanted me to go to one of them, and Daddy wanted me to go to the other. And Daddy happened to live in the town of the one that he wanted me to go to. And Mama's attitude was over my dead body. I chose her school. I didn't want to go there. The school I wanted to go to, I couldn't afford. But that was okay. My attitude towards the school I'm at has changed so completely. Because I love it. I found friends there. I found friends in Alateen and AA, Al-Anon. I found friends on the outside. And I found God. I've never shared this in talk before. Back in January, I did something that, to me, it was very special. I had, for a long time, had problems with God, with forgiving myself and asking His forgiveness for the way I'd acted towards Him, for the times I'd hated Him, for the times I'd screamed at Him for what He had done to me. And over the past few years, I've been able to work through that, and I've been able to have a relationship with God. And back in January, I was baptized. And it was just something very special, especially since both of my parents were there. That same town that Mama told me over her dead body, would she let me go to school in the same town that my father lived in? Well, God knows how to take care of problems like that. I went to Columbia, and 2 months later, my father moved to Columbia. So, I have to deal with him now. And it hasn't always been easy, because he is still out. He hasn't found it necessary to find your love and your friendship to help him. I hope one day he does, because it's just an incredible feeling. And having to deal with him has taught me a lot about the program, taught me a lot about being complacent in my program, because I haven't had to deal with my father drunk in almost 4 years, and I haven't seen him drunk in almost 5, and I hope I don't. But we began to have a friendship again. As much of a friendship as you can have with a practicing alcoholic. And I love my father today. That's something I hadn't always been able to say. But things aren't perfect now. I still have problems with faith. Faith that God is doing for me what I cannot do for myself. And He's given me a lot of things I've had to deal with. got a phone call back in May from my father. And he was drinking. And he told me he was getting married. And it kind of floored me. And he asked me to come to his wedding. And instead of working a good Alitane program, I had to cause an argument with him. And I did. And we were yelling at each other, and I'm sure that all the neighbors heard. And Mama just kept on about her business and let us have it. She let go. But instead of doing what my normal reaction after I slammed down that phone would have been, instead of getting in that new car of mine and driving it the way I sometimes had driven it, around those wild curves, praying to God that it would just go off the road, that I wouldn't have to feel this misery anymore, I turned around and I picked up the phone. I called my sponsor. I hadn't even calmed down enough. I couldn't even talk. But I explained what I'd done, and I explained how I felt. And it was okay. And he talked me through it. He said, you're going to have to look at yourself and decide what you want to do. And I went off by myself one day. And I was just sitting out in the backyard. I was looking at the butterflies, watching the cat chase them across the yard, and listening to the wind in the trees. And something that I heard when I was at a conference in Alabama not too long ago came back to me. One of the ladies who spoke talked about how her husband never intended to hurt them, how he never really meant to get drunk, how that he had a disease that he could not control. And suddenly it all made sense. I consider that a spiritual awakening for me, because despite all the years I had been around, I'd never forgiven my father for some of the things he had done. I felt at peace with myself. I felt at peace with my father and with my mother. I understood that my father had never meant to hurt me, that he did love me, and that I loved him, and that I could love him regardless of this disease that he had. And it hurts to watch him slowly, day by day, kill himself. But I know there's nothing I can do until he reaches out for help. And my father called me again drunk. But all I could hear were those words going through my mind. He has a disease. You don't have to be hurt anymore because he isn't trying to hurt you. He loves you. And I didn't have to argue with him. And I went to that wedding. It was not the easiest thing in my life to see, but I could deal with it. And I hope the two of them could be happy. And I hope they can find the program together. But that isn't my responsibility. I can love them regardless. Alitane has brought a lot of this to me. Sitting around in the meetings talking, hearing about other people's problems, hearing how they cope with some of them, and having them there just to give me a hug or smile when I really needed it. Alitane is one of the smallest programs. Look at any state you go to. You don't have large Alitane groups. And a lot of it doesn't have to do with the fact that there aren't teenagers that are willing to come. A lot of it has to do with there aren't sponsors. There aren't people willing to give of themselves so that they can return some. This state has some incredible Alitane. I've sat in meetings with them, and I've heard them. And I wish I could take them all home with me so we could have some more in our state. And I've heard all the programs here. It's strong. But we still need to reach out to others. I'm not sure where it is. I think it's probably in the AA's book. But down where we're from, we have a saying. It's, I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of Alateen to always be there. And for that, I am responsible. I feel that way today. I feel that Alateen has given me so much that there's no way that I could ever give back any of it. There's a reason here I'm here in West Virginia today. I'm not sure what it is. And there's a reason I'm alive today. Because I tried a lot of times to get rid of myself because I just couldn't deal with it anymore. God has a purpose for me. Sometimes I lose sight of that because I get caught up in everything I'm doing and everything starts screwing up and I have to get back to keep it simple. I have to get back to praying. I don't know what else to say. I know that I love every single one of you. And I can feel the love in this program and the love in this room. And it doesn't matter whether you're from South Carolina, Alabama, West Virginia, or wherever. The love is here. And you can feel it throughout here. A friend of mine is very close to me in the program. Probably the closest friend I have. I've taken my fifth step with her. I've made amends to her. She's helped me work the program. She's helped me work the steps. She showed me the importance of making amends. She showed me the importance of taking a daily inventory. I haven't verbally made amends to my father yet. I think I have to my mom, but I know that I owe her amends here from the podium because there have been things that I've done, things that I've said that I never should have, and I know I need to make amends for them now. And I need to make amends to all of you for the times that I questioned what y'all were doing, from the times that I yelled and screamed and swore that y'all didn't, that y'all couldn't help me, that y'all didn't care. Because y'all are here for everyone who comes in. And y'all are special in my heart. I take a 10th step mostly every day. It's an honest program. I don't do it every day. I need to. It's a lot easier for me to admit when I'm wrong now. I don't like admitting when I'm wrong. It's one of my character defects. Because I have the insecurities that were still with me when all this started. And it's easier to deal with them now. Admitting when I'm wrong helps me deal with it. And the friendships that I feel, friendships that I've grown to have in this program can't be matched by anything else. And it is truly a miracle of God. The 11th step is very special to me now. I go to 11th step meeting every Sunday morning that I'm in Greenville. I gain my strength from listening to other people talk about their relationship with God and with their gratitude. And I keep the hope from listening to you talk. I keep the hope that someday he'll make it to the program too. I heard a story once that life was like riding in an automobile. I'm driving, and God's riding in the passenger seat. And I keep speeding up. I keep on driving more crazy. And I'm swerving and trying to miss cars, not worrying about what I'm doing to other people. Just going, gotta go faster, gotta control this automobile. Till one day, God reaches over, takes hold of the steering wheel and steps on the brake, and I crash. And I get out of the car and yell at God, "Why could you do this to me? How did you do this? Why?" And he tells me about how I can be better. He shows me how I've hurt other people with my reckless driving. And he shows me how to make a better car from what I had. Take bits and pieces, the old car, add on some new ones, and things look a whole lot better. Taking bits and pieces of the old character of Vicki Riddle, adding some new ones, working on this character defects, trying to build a new me. I'm nowhere near finished. I have a lot of work to do each day. This program isn't an easy one to work. It gets harder and harder. It isn't going to be beautiful just because there is an alcoholic in your home or just because they quit drinking. You're going to have problems. Everyone does. It's a fact of life. But you learn to deal with them. You learn to deal with the fact that you don't fight over some of those things that you used to. And you start talking about and feeling and experiencing some of those promises that the big book talks about. Last year when I went to college, scholarships and financial aid paid my entire way. Talk about fear of economic insecurity leaving you. I got a letter the other day that said that almost all of my financial aid had been withdrawn, that I wasn't going to get it this year. And Mom and I sat down and figured it out, and we don't have to worry about it. Everything's going to be okay with that. And when we sat there and we talked about that, that phrase is all I could hear in my mind, is fear of economic insecurity will leave you. And I'm learning about a new happiness. I'm learning about what serenity is. I'm learning to live and let live. I'm learning to do it one day at a time. I'm learning to let go and let God. Because I can't control you. I can't make you act the way I want you to. As much as I'd like to be a little puppeteer with people sometimes, it just isn't the way it's supposed to be. God's in control of my life today, as long as I get Vicki out of the way. And sometimes that isn't too simple, because I can be a problem, and I can cause problems. Each day, for me, is a new beginning. I can get up in the morning and ask God to help me. What I do that day is strictly up to me. And if I messed it up, then it's my fault. And I'm so glad that we were able to come this weekend. It's been such a beautiful trip, such a wonderful time of sharing with you. And it's been a good time to let go some more of the anger and to be able to honestly say that I love everyone in this room. And I love the things that y'all have done for me. And that I appreciate the smiles. And I appreciate the hugs. And I appreciate the friendship. 5 years ago, I had no friends. 5 years ago, I didn't want any friends. My sponsor taught me how to take down that wall, brick by brick. He taught me how to build bridges over those communication gaps to those people that I didn't think I could ever make amends to. And God's taught me how to love myself. Sometimes that one's hard because there's things about me I don't like. But I talk it out with my sponsor. I work my Alateen program. I take inventory. And when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it, usually. And if I don't admit it, Mom usually will admit it for me. I'd like to close with something I found in my Alateen book. It took me 4 years to find it. It's on the first page. In the introduction, it says, "Yesterday is gone, tomorrow isn't here, so I can only live for today." And that's what I try to do. And just for today, I'm happy, joyous and free, and it's okay to be me. And I'm proud to say that alcoholism has touched my family. It tore my family apart, but it's brought us back together too. And that's something I'll always be grateful for. Thank you.